one notice or one piece of advice, and they see, they know. And this type of search, you know, search for the true knowledge has been given away from the people. Yeah. The people are searching for this and that, the news of the celebrities, something that, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unfortunately. Okay, that's right. Today's children are the next generation, you know, next adults of the next generation, and we have to take care of them. For sure, Islam and the religion of Islam has some good pieces of advice for social etiquettes and the family life. Inshallah, have chance to use them in our life and apply them.
Inshallah.
Not a preacher without practice. Inshallah. Okay. Thank you, Masha Sheikh Qasim and Sheikh Ali Himani, for your presence in the program. Viewpoints, it was very kind of you. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Also, our YouTube channel, Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
The same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I wanna have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong in life, a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Subcontinent.
The Subcontinent.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Subcontinent. On this program, we will address the most significant issues in the South Asian region that affect the governments, organizations, the people, and also the region as a whole. So, stay with us.
In this edition of The Subcontinent, we will discuss how Iran, which has for the past four decades been host to one of the largest and most protracted refugee situations in the world, continues to embrace Afghan refugees. And we shall expose the blatant duplicity of Western countries who continue to deport and cold-shoulder refugees from Afghanistan.
The hasty and irresponsible exit of US-led foreign forces and Taliban's sweeping takeover in Afghanistan August last year was followed by freezing of Afghan assets worth billions of dollars. It plunged the South Asian country into an unimaginable economic crisis, forcing millions of people to flee their homes and belongings. A large majority of these people took refuge in neighboring Iran, which, unlike the Western countries that occupied and wreaked havoc in Afghanistan for 20 years, warmly embraced the fleeing Afghan refugees.
After the Taliban laid siege to Kabul on August the 15th last year, drawing the curtains on a 20-year-long foreign military occupation, the US and its allies rushed to cut off Afghanistan's access to international aid and froze nearly $10 billion in assets belonging to the country's central bank. The International Monetary Fund and World Bank followed suit. Besides spawning the worst humanitarian crisis in recent history, the situation also displaces millions of Afghans, forcing them to flee to neighboring countries. Hundreds of thousands of Afghans have made their way across the border into Iran in the last 6 months, negotiating the treacherous terrain and braving enormous risks. According to international aid organizations, around 4,000 to 5,000 people are streaming into Iran each day, escaping the horrors of poverty and insecurity fueled by the U.S. and its allies. While many of them come through illegal channels, paying smugglers hefty money, many others have arrived through proper legal channels. Despite the fact that the Iranian economy has been in a tailspin because of crippling U.S. sanctions, the incoming Afghan refugees have been accorded warm reception and provided necessary facilities. Iran's assistance to the war-weary Afghan refugees has been largely without any international aid.
The Iranian approach for Afghan refugees need to be supported. Most of the refugees here are living in the community. You know, this is something that we are actually promoting through the Global Compact. In this particular situation where additional pressure is put on the country and this has repercussions that we all know about, it is more difficult for the government to sustain a policy that is so inclusive in respect of refugees.
While rich Western countries have erected walls to prevent the entry of Afghan refugees, Iran has opened its gates and hearts to them despite the difficult economic conditions in the country. From prioritizing the vaccination of Afghan refugees to providing them equal educational opportunities, Iran's approach to the Afghan refugee crisis has been full of compassion and humanity. Top UN officials have acknowledged the role played by Iran in alleviating the suffering of ill-fated Afghan refugees while urging the world to share the burden.
The domestic political climate in the US and Europe has turned increasingly hostile to asylum seekers from Afghanistan. The new Afghan refugee exodus has caused jitters in Europe, where politicians fear a repeat of the 2015 migrant crisis. On the other hand, Iran, which already plays host to more than 3 million refugees from Afghanistan, has embraced almost a million more in the last 6 months.
Well, the West has always failed Afghans, you know, whether it's refugees or the Afghan people. You know, they betrayed us in the past and they betrayed us again. They betrayed us in the 80s and 90s and now again, you know, in 2021. They destroyed our country, they invaded our country, they created refugees, and when the time came that Afghan needed help to run away from the Taliban, you know, they shut their, you know, borders and then make it so difficult, you know. Even now in Britain, you know, if you're an Afghan and if you arrive on the back of the lorry or if you arrive on a boat or a ship, you know, you might be ending up in prison for up to 4 years, you know, which is totally against the basic international human rights law on asylum and immigration or asylum seekers or refugees. But, you know, the current mess in our country is created by the West. It's the West which is responsible. They went to Afghanistan, invaded our country, and then fought the Taliban for 20 years, the longest war. You know, killed thousands, hundreds of thousands of innocent people by Afghan security forces, by the Taliban, by the Islamic State, by foreign forces. And when the time came, you know, that the Afghan needed help, you know, the West shut everything on their faces and abandoned and betrayed the Afghans.
Ivo Friesen, UN Refugee Agency's representative in Iran, recently admitted that the amount of assistance provided by international organizations to address the needs of Afghan refugees in Iran was small, and most of the support was coming from the Iranian government and people. Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian, in his meeting with the UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi in Tehran mid-December, described the agency's assistance to Iran woefully insufficient. The lack of assistance from the international community, however, has not deterred Iran from embracing Afghan refugees. Iran's Health Minister Bahram Einollahi, in his remarks, recently asserted that Afghan refugees were given health services, including COVID-19 vaccines, on a par with Iranian nationals, Afghan refugees also avail opportunities to enroll in schools and universities on scholarships. The process to ease visa rules for Afghan nationals is also underway. All this bears testimony to Iran's humane refugee policy, unlike the West.
The blockade of Afghan assets by the US and its allies has precipitated the worst humanitarian crisis in Afghanistan. At the same time, US sanctions on Iran have created huge impediments in the way of the Islamic Republic's ability to assist the fleeing Afghan refugees. Both Iran's foreign ministry as well as the country's mission to the UN Security Council have sounded the alarm, urging the world community to share the burden of Afghanistan's refugee crisis, which they helped create in the first place.
While Iran has, in line with its refugee policy, provided necessary assistance to refugees coming from Afghanistan, it has continued to remind the international community of its responsibility toward the people displaced by the 20-year-long failed military adventure of the US and its NATO allies. Iran's envoy to the UN, Majid Takht-Ravanchi, speaking at a UN Security Council session on Afghanistan on January the 27th, asserted that Tehran had done all in its power to support Afghan refugees over the past four decades, despite harsh sanctions. He said that financial constraints due to U.S. sanctions were impeding Iran's efforts to assist incoming refugees in the absence of international assistance. He further noted Iran had kept its borders with Afghanistan open to ease both the people's movement and trade after the Taliban takeover last year.
Always, you know, the West have this weapon, you know. The sanction is very easy for the West, you know, when you launch an illegal war, you know, and then you fail, you know, you have no strategy. And then you empower the most vicious warlords and drug lords and rapists and thieves, bandits, you know, and corrupt people, you know, in Asian countries. And then when the time comes to take your responsibility and say, look, you know, I got it wrong and I'm sorry, and apologize to the people. That's how, you know, the West is famous for. You know, they go to a country, they sanction them, they invade them, they destroy their infrastructure. And then, you know, the poor people pay the price. You know, sanction always, you know, whether it's in Yemen or Afghanistan or Iran or, you know, some other countries, you know, or Cuba, you know, it kills innocent people. You know, it doesn't kill the rich because the rich have the money. They have the resources. They can move around anywhere they want, you know. But it's the poor, especially the women and children who pay the heavy price. And they're the victims of you know, fail, you know, wars, you know, like in Iraq and Afghanistan and Libya and you know, in Sudan, in Somalia, and so many other countries.
Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian, during his meeting with the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres in Munich, echoed same concerns, stressing the need for continued humanitarian assistance to Afghans while calling for greater assistance by the UN Refugee Agency to Iran. The top UN official, for his part, commended Iran's generosity for hosting millions of Afghans while calling on the global community to collaborate in managing the unfolding crisis.
Of nearly 6 million Afghan refugees, almost 90% are hosted by Afghanistan's two closest neighbors, Iran and Pakistan. Iran alone is home to more than 3 million Afghan refugees. Before the latest refugee exodus triggered by the botched US exit, Iran has for the past four decades been host to one of the largest and most protracted urban refugee situations in the world. According to aid agencies, around 4,000 to 5,000 refugees have been entering Iran each day in recent months through informal border crossings.
Iran, which is home to around 1 million documented and 2 million undocumented Afghan refugees, shares a 572-mile porous border with the neighboring country. Its refugee policy has been consistent since the 1979 Islamic Revolution, providing safe refuge to people fleeing war and persecution. The Norwegian Refugee Council, an independent humanitarian organization providing assistance to refugees across the world, has commended Iran for welcoming and hosting millions of displaced Afghans for the past four decades. A In a statement recently, the organization called on the international community to step up to support Iran and urged rich nations to both ramp up aid and keep their borders open to people fleeing conflict and persecution.
It has been commendable that Iran has been hosting refugees, primarily from Afghanistan, for more than 40 years now, which is an important feature, an important achievement, and a commendable achievement. It also means that, as UNHCR, with other international partners, we see it as our task to continue to try and give as much support to the authorities in these efforts for as long as refugees are here, with, of course, the ultimate solution being that Afghanistan becomes stable, fully stable, so that people can go back in safety, voluntarily, and with dignity. Iran has done very well over the years in making basic social services accessible for refugees. This is what we would like to see, what the international norm is, that systems are accessible for refugees, basic social services. Education, we all recall the importance of the decree by the leader in 2015, so that Afghan children can now access education services just like any other child in Iran.
The progressive and inclusive policies of the successive governments in Tehran have ensured that refugees are provided equal access to education, health, and livelihood opportunities. According to estimates, more than 96% of Afghan refugees live in Iranian cities, towns, and villages alongside their Iranian host communities, while 4% are put up in more than a dozen settlements managed by the Interior Ministry in collaboration with the UN Refugee Agency. Iran has acceded to both the 1951 UNHCR Convention and its 1967 Protocol, which define the legal status of refugees across the world.
You're listening to The Subcontinent, broadcast by IRIB English Radio. This weekly program reviews ongoing developments in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Listen to The Subcontinent every Monday here on IRIB English Radio.
Now, to have more insight, we are joined by Mr. Mustafa Ariyayi at Covert Action magazine. First of all, welcome to the program, Mr. Ariyayi. Now, at a time when Western countries are closing their doors and deporting Afghan refugees, Iran has openly embraced them. Now, what is your take on this contrast in refugee policies?
Well, I totally agree. As your question presupposes, there is indeed a difference in policy. We often hear from Western politicians and the Western media, mainstream media rather, how they brag about human rights and how they try to be bound by the rule of law. And that certainly does apply to refugees or those people who are subjected to inhumane situation and therefore have to fled their country. But the reality, unfortunately, is sometimes very different. Iran, I personally want to thank the Iranian people and on behalf of so many Afghans who have sought refuge in a brother nation like Iran. And Iran for the last decade has accepted and openly embraced millions upon millions of Afghanis, helpless Afghanis, people who were forced to leave their country because there was a political crisis, there was even war. And you know, after so many years, unfortunately, the situation in Afghanistan has only exacerbated ever since. But still, for the Iranian nation, they felt the obligation made itself felt to help their neighbor. And for that, I really want to thank them. Unfortunately, on the part of the Western world, the problem is that they always have a narrative. But that narrative doesn't necessarily line up with the reality. And the Afghan refugee issue is certainly a manifestation of that, where you see that a lot of Western countries are very adamant and even trying to refrain themselves from accepting so many Afghanis. But that is somehow very weird, because in the first place, it was Western countries that has contributed to the situation as such in Afghanistan. And then to say that we should have a closed-door policy towards Afghanis, that is a bit rich, to say the least.
Now, as we've seen, Iran has for the past four decades been host to one of the largest and most protected refugee situations in the world. Now, is it fair to say it's time for the world to step up and share the burden as well?
I totally agree with that. I think Iran, neighboring countries in particular, and most notably Iran, has always stood by the Afghan people by and large, even in the midst of a war. I remember, many Afghans remember it very well when there was the 8 years war between Iraq and Iran. Even at that very point, Iran accepted openly so many Afghans. And Iran alone, given its current financial situation, cannot handle the problem, of course. Where the Western world, you see a lot of right-wing politicians and leftists, there is a battle between them on in terms of how to regulate the migrant crisis. But they really take an issue when it's about 10,000 refugees or accepting 10,000 refugees on an annual basis. But Iran has already is already hosting millions upon millions of Afghanis, and I think it's absolutely time to have a frank discussion about that and to accept the fact that Iran indeed alone, and also a country like Pakistan, cannot bear the burden alone anymore.
Now, another important fact is that Iran has been providing assistance to Afghan refugees without any substantial international support and in the face of the crippling U.S. sanctions. Now, how do you see this?
Yes, I was already alluding to that issue of the financial situation in Iran, and those crippling U.S. sanctions has largely contributed to the situation as such in Iran. It has not only affected ordinary Iranian people, but as an extension, also many Afghanis or many other refugee groups residing in Iran. And I personally believe that the illegal U.S. sanction or Western sanction imposed upon the Iranian nation should come to a speedy and unconditional end, as Iran is doing everything at its end of the bargaining table. Iran has complied with the norms established by the IAEA within the framework of the IAEA, and everything what they do lines up with the NPT. So there is no reason to prolong the sanctions, illegal sanctions rather, against Iran. And in addition to that, it was the U.S. who unilaterally decided to exit the agreement with Iran. I think that yes, the sanctions against Iran are not only hurting the Iranian people, but also to a very large extent Afghan refugees. And it would be very good if the sanctions would come to an end.
Mr. Arya, do you think the unfolding Afghan refugee crisis can be managed if the U.S. and its international partners unfreeze Afghan assets and facilitate aid to the crisis-stricken country?
I think it would give some space to breathe again, but on the long run, I think there much more is needed, of course. This is a humanitarian crisis in Afghanistan, and it's unknown in scale. So I think that on the long run, much more should be done than only unfreezing Afghan assets. In addition, I think that Afghanistan strongly needs a regional solution rather than an international one. It would be a very good start, but it's not everything.
Sir, as we know, the latest Afghan refugee exodus was triggered by the botched U.S. military exit from Afghanistan last August. Now, is it fair to say that the Americans owe reparations to these displaced Afghans?
I think they do. Oh, yes, absolutely. Like I said in the introduction, We're talking about a crisis that they, and when I'm talking about they, I'm alluding to the West. They have started the crisis in Afghanistan in the first place. They went into Afghanistan under false premises, by the way. The hijackers of 9/11 attack were not even Afghanis. So, but, you know, by the operation of international law, they somehow knew how to justify the so-called war against terror. But 20 years after, we saw what kind of a detrimental effect it had on many Afghans. I think that the United States does owe reparation to not only to displaced Afghans, but to Afghanistan as such. So they actually left the Afghan people alone, and they couldn't care what would happen with the Afghan people.
Ms. Arioye, thank you for being on the program again. Now let's see how people have reacted on social media.
There's one from Ivo Friesen himself, that's a UNHCR representative in Iran, who stresses the importance of the international community coming together to share responsibility with Iran in hosting Afghan refugees. Susan Naomi is an Afghan-American activist who says, the U.S. and Europe are in no position to criticize Iran and Pakistan, who have been taking in Afghan refugees despite the COVID-19 pandemic and U.S. sanctions. We've got a comment from a Bristol-based social worker, Ozgul Gochen, who commends Iran for hosting millions of Afghan refugees despite crippling U.S. sanctions, calling on the world community to pay its historical debt to Iran. Filippo Grandi, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, thanks Iran for including Afghan refugees in its COVID-19 vaccine campaign, praising the country for its inclusive policies and services. The Norwegian Refugee Council Secretary General Jan Egelin tells a British newspaper that more people have been crossing the Afghanistan-Iran border every day than those accumulated altogether on the border of Poland and Belarus.
And that was our episode about the unfolding Afghan refugee crisis and Iran's humane, compassionate response to it. We shall meet again next week. So till then, take good care.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
A major new United Nations report setting out the action needed to tackle the climate crisis was released on Monday, 4th of April, after marathon talks to agree its findings. The latest report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, is expected to set out the rapid action required to curb global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius or below 2 degrees Celsius, including deep cuts to fossil fuels with a switch to technology such as renewable energies. The article you're about to hear has been written by the London Evening Standard journalist Emily Beament. The piece is titled, UN to Release New Report on Action to Tackle Climate Crisis After Marathon Talks. A major new United Nations report setting out the action needed to tackle the climate crisis was released on Monday, 4th of April, after marathon talks to agree its findings. The latest report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, is expected to set out the rapid action required to curb global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius or below 2 degrees Celsius, including deep cuts to fossil fuels with a switch to technology such as renewable energies. The report from the United Nations Science Body, which was released on Monday, highlighted measures to cut emissions from the energy sector, from the agricultural sector and land, cities, buildings, industry and transport. It also emphasized the role of consumer behavior and looked at ways to take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, including through activities such as planting trees and new technology, and the challenges involved. It is clear that the solutions are cheaper than the impacts, that acting to tackle the climate crisis is cheaper than not acting. But the two-week-long online meeting of scientists and representatives of 195 governments to approve the summary of the report line by line ran late into Sunday, well past the Friday 1st of April scheduled finish time, as delegates wrangled over the text. The approval process means that when the final version was released, governments have signed off on the findings. But it has been slow progress to secure agreement on the report, which outlined the need to swiftly and dramatically cut greenhouse gases, particularly by reducing fossil fuel use. The inclusion of language on curbing coal power and fossil fuel subsidies in the Glasgow Pact agreed at United Nations climate talks in Scotland late last year, provoked heated debate between countries heavily reliant on fossil fuels and those most threatened by the impacts of climate change. The new United Nations report comes as soaring energy prices and supply pressures, worsened by the conflict in Ukraine, have prompted renewed debate over security of energy supplies and whether to accelerate climate action or exploit more oil and gas resources. In the United Kingdom, the fossil fuel industry and some MPs in the House of Commons have urged a restart to controversial fracking or more extraction from North Sea oil and gas. But there have also been widespread calls for insulating homes, more renewable energies and weaning the country off gas in response to the crisis. The British government is set to unveil its new energy security strategy this week, with expectations it will set out plans to boost new nuclear power capacity, solar energy and offshore wind. But there appears to have been a debate within the government over the role of onshore wind, although it is cheap and popular with the public, and any efforts to boost domestic oil and gas production in the strategy will prove controversial with campaigners. The new United Nations report is the third installment of the sixth assessment report, an overarching analysis of the world's knowledge on climate change and the first of its kind since 2014. The first part of the assessment, which looked at the physical basis of climate change and was released in August of 2021, found humans are unequivocally driving global warming, with the effects already being felt. It was labelled a code red for humanity by United Nations Secretary-General Antonio Guterres. When the second report was released in February of this year, detailing the impacts of rising temperatures and the options and limits to adapting to them, Antonio Guterres described it as an atlas of human suffering and a damning indictment of failed climate leadership. It found climate change has led to increasing heat and heat waves, rising sea levels, rising number of floods, wildfires and drought, causing death, food and water scarcity and migration. Ahead of the latest report's publication, Greenpeace UK senior climate advisor Charlie Cronick said, "Our fossil fuel dependence is funding war, and soaring gas prices are hurting millions of households. We already have good reasons to move away from oil and gas and invest in insulation and heat pumps to cut energy wastage from our homes." But on Monday, the world's leading climate scientists reminded us of the other major reason we must do so: to stop the climate disaster threatening everything we hold dear. Sam Hall, director of the Conservative Environment Network, which includes dozens of Tory MPs, said the goals of energy security, cost of living and cutting emissions to net zero to tackle climate change all pull in the same direction. The answer remains the same in all cases: clean energy deployment, reducing fossil fuel consumption and improving energy efficiency. Gareth Redmond-King, international lead at the Energy and Climate Intelligence Unit, said the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has set out solutions to the climate crisis. Gareth Redmond-King said, "It sets out in some detail how we respond to the alarm and avoid the apocalyptic future we know we're heading for if we don't act. It is clear that the solutions are cheaper than the impacts, that acting to tackle the climate crisis is cheaper than not acting. It is now down to political leaders, particularly G20 leaders, as the largest economies and biggest emitters of carbon dioxide, to choose how bad we let things get."
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم Dear listeners, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. You are listening to IRIB English Radio and you are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we discuss problems, questions and issues parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their offspring. The answers are based upon the noble Quran and the narrations of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam and his holy progeny. We have in the studio our guest speaker, Sister Radhia Batul Najafi. Salamun alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In our previous episode, we talked about encouragement, the important role of encouragement in our teenagers' upbringing.
Exactly.
So in this episode, we will talk about the punishment, how the punishment should be and what kind of role the punishment plays in our teenagers' upbringing. Because as we said, the Holy Quran also says our Anbiya and the Prophets, they have come with both things, you know, encouragement and warnings also. So we should also follow the same rulings of upbringing in our teenagers, especially.
When you say about punishment, I always remember the fine which usually traffic police takes from us. That is very obvious in our life in that sense that we know the wisdom behind punishment. Because many youth, they will ask us again that why punishment? Yeah, punishment is not good. Everyone takes it in a very negative way. But even we discussed before too in our episode that our intention should be very, very pure about punishment. Like we should punish our children because we want to guide them, bring them back to the right path. We as a human being get more affected and we can keep on track more and we can respect the rules more by the fear of that fine and punishment, not just by reward. Have you seen any traffic police who gives some reward if you are respecting the traffic rules? In normal routine,
no.
Yeah, if you are always, for example, wearing seatbelt, no one gives you the reward. But once if you don't wear it, they will take some fine.
Yeah.
So here everyone understand. But when teenagers, they ask us why you are punishing, why? What is the reason? You know, that is very important. Like if they know the reason and the wisdom behind it, then they would love it. And they would not hate their parents because of punishment. They would say, oh, you are always punishing us. You know, you always deprive us from our screen time or whatever. So this is really, really important too.
But this is the last element to use, you know, in our upbringing.
Beautiful, yeah.
As Imam Ali alayhi salam also says, man lam yuslihu husnul mudarat, yuslihu husnul mukafat. If someone does not get cured by good behavior, he gets well using the mukafat, means the punishment.
Beautiful.
He needs
beautiful.
The punishment.
Yeah.
Because if we have used the encouragement on time according to the act, but still if it is not, you know, useful, then there is no any other situation, no any element other
example,
than punishment.
Exactly, the example of like you are just feeding so many vitamins to your, you know, teenager, for example, you know, boosting his health situation, giving. But still something is bothering inside. So you have to take him to the surgeon and, you know, you have to use the knife sometimes, you know, so that kind of bitterness comes in life.
Yeah, dear listeners, stay tuned. Inshallah, after a short break, we will come back again.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Dear listeners, welcome back. So we were talking about the punishment. Let me tell my dear listeners that punishment does not mean the physical punishment. As Islam always says, emphasize that we should not use physical, and we are not allowed to punish physically. No matter our children are, you know, they are our children or teenagers or they are our students, Islam never allows us to punish physically.
Yeah, almost never. Definitely.
Very few moments we can use slightly physical punishment. Exactly. That is exception. So here punishment means there are different kind of punishment. For example, nowadays they are using internet or social media. We do not allow them to use for a certain time as a punishment.
Or neglecting them.
Neglecting them.
Not watching to them, you know, like being a bit frowny towards them. You know, that is a big way of negligence.
Yeah, if you have a good relationship with your teenagers and if you don't talk or, for example, get frowny to him for some couple of hours, maybe it's very hard for him.
Cut the relationship for a few hours.
Again, this punishment, as we will talk, inshallah, it depends on the situation, on the qualities of your teenager. You know, if he is or she is very sensitive, you can use very slight punishments, you know.
Yes, definitely. And this is very important.
Yeah, this is very important.
I remember once, you know, I was reading in book that if your child is, for example, 7 years old, so you can punish him or her for 7 minutes. You know, because I was reading, I said, oh, you know, he has done some mistake. I will punish him. So I said, if you don't listen to mama, so I will put you in the storeroom for 7 minutes or 3 minutes. The moment I said the child, you know, that was the scene to see, you know, like first time in his life, he was listening to this kind of statement. He said, no, mama, you know, you can't think about it. And that statement was enough. You know, every child is different. So one child get change, you know, that the revolution comes very easily because the heart is very, you know, tender and very soft. And some children are extremely naughty, and teenagers, so they're very stubborn. So you have to take that step for them. So every teenager is definitely different from others.
Yeah, and in punishment also, we should be moderate. And as I said, you know, there shouldn't be any physical punishment and it should not get prolonged.
You know,
it should be for a certain short time or period. As Imam Kadhim alayhi salam says, لا تضربه وهجره ولا تطل.
Beautiful.
Yeah, don't beat him or her. وهجره, leave him alone. Means cut your relations with him or with her for a certain time, for a short period of time, and wala tutil, do not prolong it. Maybe for a few or a couple of hours or a few days, maybe.
Maximum, about two. Believers, hadith says maximum is 3 days, not three more days, than that. So, but between parents and I think child, it should be not in hours, you know, it shouldn't be more than some hours. So I think this is bothering them a lot. If you neglect them, like the way Allah says on the day of judgment, you know, Allah is not just paying attention to some of, you know, some people.
That will be the biggest punishment for some of the people.
You know, not paying attention is the biggest punishment. So here also, when your relationship is very good with your children, if you just neglect them, they will get the indicator and the message, and that is punishment, you know, and we shouldn't go for more. Inshallah, you know, our environment of house should be based on so much respect and love. Then this little tiny ways of punishment will work very easily.
Dear listeners, let's take a short break. We will come back after the break.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مطي الخيرات يا مطي الخيرات
إمام علي عليه السلام said excessive blame causes the fire of obstinacy to flame.
Dear listeners, welcome back. So if he does or she does a small mistake or she does not listen to us for a, you know, small thing, we should not punish them so heavily or big punishment.
The same way we said about encouragement. That, you know, if the achievement is so high, so encouragement and the gift should be high. Same here. If the teenager commit any kind of, you know, mistake, the mistake is so high. For example, he have stolen something, for example, that is something out of our imagination.
Or he or she has committed a sin.
Sin,
you know?
Or something really disrespectful. So, and with knowing, you know, and we have to analyze definitely everything. And if we reach to that conclusion that this action has done by intention, then the punishment should be according to the mistake.
Definitely. And we always should keep in our mind that we should never disrespect them.
Oh, that is not allowed in Islam at all.
This is a haram act. If we disrespect or betray them, this is itself a haram, a sin. Islam always respects. Allah says, Allah has respected us and we should respect each other and we should respect our children, our teenagers, especially they are very sensitive. And unfortunately, sometimes we lose our temperament and we become very disrespectful, which can lead us for so many dangerous things.
Yeah.
We should be very cautious.
And you know, whenever we are punishing them, or be not giving attention to them, our intention shouldn't be to take revenge. You know, that is very important. Our intention should to guide them, to bring them more nearer to us. So by neglecting them or by just punishing them, if we are punishing them with insulting way, then definitely they will run away from us. And our intention is not to lose them, to get them back. So for getting them back, this punishment should be full of love and full of respect. So they should see the love inside the punishment.
Dear listeners, thank you so much for being with us. I hope you enjoyed. If you have any question, comments, or any suggestion, you can write us at englishradio@irib.ir and you can follow us on our social media, Call of Islam Radio, and you can visit our website, parstoday.com. Until next episode, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space returned upon rest.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.